So thank you all for attending this session, the first session of the ApacheCon. Let's now welcome Lars Engelbrecht. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can everyone hear me? Is the mic okay? Okay. Welcome to the behind the scenes of the Apache Software Foundation talk. So the ASF, the Apache Software Foundation, exists since 17 years now. So by now, most people have figured out that Apache stands for more than just the Apache web server. In fact, we have almost like 180 different software development projects at the ASF today. What I want today in the session today is to show you how the ASF is organized, why it was created, how the projects work. But before we take a look at the behind the scenes, basically, just a quick note about myself. I've been involved with the Apache web server since almost the very beginning, so since 1996. So yeah, actually I realized by writing the notes for this that I'm doing this stuff for like 20 years now, so I feel really old now. Because I've been involved since the very beginning, I'm also co-founder and a member of the Apache Software Foundation. Who knows what the ASF is? Maybe let me ask the following. Who's actually involved with any of the Apache Software Foundation projects? Either contributor, committer, PMC, show of hands. Okay. Who happens to be an ASF member? Okay. They've heard this talk many times, and none of these guys is actually here. That's very good, so I can tell you all about the details. So, what is the ASF? The ASF is a non-profit, a U.S. non-profit organization. For those of you who are from the U.S., it's basically a so-called 501c3 charity organization or non-profit organization. It was incorporated in 1999 in the state of Delaware. I think it's just a typical place where you do this in the U.S. It doesn't necessarily mean that we had any people or members in Delaware. I think it doesn't really matter. It's just the place where you can incorporate a company. Two important things to mention about what the ASF is. One thing, so apart from being a non-profit organization, it is an organization that is volunteer-driven. And it also means that only individuals can become a member of the ASF. So it's very different to other foundations, something like the Eclipse Foundation, where a company can become a member. Typically, that involves like paying a membership fee. In the case of the ASF, as a committer or a PMC member, you don't have to pay any fee or anything. But only individuals can become a member. And I get back to that topic later in the slides to talk how this actually works. Another important part of what the ASF actually is, as I said already, it's driven by volunteers. So the ASF is different to a normal company which pays developers to develop their software or outsources software development to another company. All the various software development projects we have are typically volunteers in the sense that these people do not get paid by the ASF. They may get paid by someone, a company paying them to work on a particular project. That may apply to some of you. But we have a large number of people who simply do this for fun or because they have an interest in specific topics. Saying that we don't pay anyone isn't 100% true. There are some exceptions. We don't pay for software development, but we do have certain contractors that we pay. In the very beginning, everything was just hosted on one server, and you could just manage this as a part-time thing. However, we now have, I think, 6 part-time sysadmins, system administrators, who manage the infrastructure for the ASF. Very important. As soon as something goes down, developers start screaming, "Oh, I couldn't commit, something is broken." And the infrastructure is doing a really great team in getting this all the various services running smoothly. I get back to that later. Just to quickly mention it, we also pay for certain secretary services. We have an executive assistant to manage some admin-related tasks. That's basically Melissa, who sits at the Apache booth. You can talk to her, get some stickers and Apache pins and stuff. And we also pay for various press services. For example, doing a press release, that doesn't come for free, and you have to pay for this. But in general, very important software development, the ASF doesn't pay for this directly. And the other way around, you don't have to pay a membership fee or something to be part of the ASF or be part of a project. Before I continue talking about the ASF, let's step back a little bit. So in 1995, well, things looked a bit different. At that time, the Apache web server didn't exist. At that time, the most popular web server, pardon me, I had a cold the last few days, so I'm feeling a bit. So 1995, the most popular web server was the NCSA web server, which was an open source project by the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the University of Illinois. And it was used by many people. However, at some point, development stopped. I think there was lack of funding. People moved to other things. However, it was a popular web server. So people needed new features. People needed to fix bugs. To be fair, the source code of the NCSA was actually quite horrible. And people got together, like some of the high-profile users at that time who were running websites, whether privately or commercially, got together and said, okay, let's create a new web server. At that time, they didn't have a name yet. So Brian Behlendorf, one of the original founders of the web server, created a mailing list on his server called New HTTPD, with the intention of creating a new web server. In fact, Apache was based on NCSA. Well, the NCSA was open source, so it was under a permissible BSD style license, so you could just take the source code and work with that. Many changes went into the server itself. So the first version that was released of Apache, the first beta version, was April 1995. I believe the first 1.0 version was December 1995. By the way, here's a picture of most of the Apache group members. It was taken at the very, very first ApacheCon in 1998. It predates the Apache Software Foundation. So that ApacheCon was only about the web server. There wasn't anything else. It was really just about the web server. So why the name Apache? How did that happen? Sometimes you hear the joke that, okay, people got together on a mailing list, they exchanged patches for the NCSA web server, exchanged some more patches, so we had Apache server. It makes a nice pun on words, but it's actually not the reason why the name Apache was chosen. I wasn't there at that time when the name was chosen. I only started contributing in 1996. However, as far as I've been told, it was actually Brian Behlendorf who suggested the name, and it was chosen from respect for the various Native American nations collectively referred to as Apache. And, they're well known for their superior skills in warfare strategy and their inexhaustible endurance. I guess that's the reason why the name Apache was chosen. Shortly after Brian suggested the name, Randy Turbush came up with that feather logo that you probably still know. And basically since that time, the Apache name stuck and was even then carried over into the Apache Software Foundation as the main logo for the foundation itself and most, not all, but most or many of the software development projects actually use the feather as part of their project logo. So version 1.0 released end of 1995. It only took, I think, a few months until the Apache web server became the most widely used web server and actually surpassed the NCSA web server in terms of adoption. One reason for that, or actually get asked, why did Apache become so popular? Why not another web server? Why not something else? I think one reason for this is it was very similar to the NCSA in terms of the configuration. Some people of you who've configured an Apache may love or hate the configuration syntax. let's not talk about that. But it's very similar to what the NCSA originally came up with. So it kind of adopted that syntax. However, the main reason, in my opinion, why it became so successful is it was simply the right time. There wasn't much choice at that time in terms of which web server to use. NCSA wasn't that great. Everything else wasn't that great. The Microsoft IIS didn't even exist at that time. Well, I wouldn't have chosen it anyway. Okay. And then most importantly, the reason why it became so successful is it was open source. It was under the Apache license. Again, a permissive license, very similar to the BSD license. Another reason, it had a modular design, so it became very, very easy to create modules to add additional features and functionality. So projects like PHP, Modperl, were created and actually used the Apache web server as their core, basically to provide the functionality. So they didn't have to reinvent the wheel in terms of the basic HTTP functionality. So with popularity came some problems at that time. We had basically seeing companies or even individuals trying to make money based on the name, infringing on the trademark, simply abusing the name in various ways. That led to the creation, was one of the reasons why the ASF was created in 1999. I thought Star Wars is coming up in a few months, so I hope you don't mind my slides. The other reason is that at that time it was really just a bunch of individuals known as the Apache group doing the web server and doing the development. There was no company behind this, no foundation, no legal entity. So basically, with all that abuse, or trademark infringement, or other issues we've seen, there wasn't much we could do because there wasn't a company, there was no entity. So that basically was the main reason why the ASF was created. Another reason was that IBM at that time wanted to donate source code to the ASF, to the Apache group. And then I realized, well, how do we do this? It's just a bunch of guys, basically. So they actually helped initially, donated lawyer time, basically, and helped us to bootstrap the ASF and sorting out the legal paperwork. So let's talk about what the ASF actually provides. So most importantly, it's an open source foundation. It exists to provide open source software. It exists to provide open source software under the Apache license, as I already mentioned. And it provides the environment or the development environment to actually develop software. In 1999, things like GitHub didn't exist, which is now a popular choice to basically just go there, develop something, and make it visible or shared with other people, or make it easy for people to contribute, submit bug reports, submit patches, etc. At that time, these services didn't really exist. So basically, the ASF provides the necessary technical services, issue tracking, mailing lists, source code repositories, SVN, etc. But the ASF is more than just a technical, more than just providing the technical services and a development environment. By becoming a developer of an Apache project, or by a project becoming part of the ASF, they become part of the whole community and basically part of that umbrella that the foundation provides. Umbrella in the sense of community, but also the legal protection that I mentioned. The times where, as a developer, you could just develop something and release it are basically long, long over. These days, you have to worry about lawsuits, trademark infringements, copyright issues, patent-related issues. As a developer, the ASF shields you from these potential issues. The other thing that made this easier is also donations. As part of the Apache group just being a bunch of individuals developing software, it was a bit difficult to handle donations, like who actually runs the account that has the money in it, who actually pays for certain services. So with being incorporated as a nonprofit organization, it makes it easy to basically accept these donations from individuals or from companies. And as I said in the beginning, the main part is obviously to make sure that the projects basically have a home and make sure that they exist past the individual involvement in a particular project. So for example, the original developers of the Apache web server, some people are still around, but some people have moved on doing other things. And the ASF provides basically an entity to encouraging new developers to join and contribute to the ASF. Pardon me. I already mentioned the Apache license, a very, very important part of the ASF. I mentioned it's a permissive open source license, sometimes referred to as a BSD style license. It's very business friendly in the sense that it's not a copyleft license, but like the GPL. It includes a patent grant that was fairly new at that time. I think Apache was the first open source license that had one of these patent grants in it, which means it reduces or mitigates the patent risk for the end user. So as a developer, if you're working on an Apache project, you cannot own a patent. Well, you could, but if you basically contribute code that relates to the patent you own, you can then not later sue the users of that software to which you've contributed the code. So as a contributor, some of you may know that you have to sign a so-called committer license agreement, a CLA, which means that you grant the ASF the right to distribute your code, et cetera, and also deals with the patent-related side of things. It doesn't mean that this removes all potential patent issues. However, it mitigates the issue for the end user. Another important part of the ASF is basically if you download software from an Apache.org website, you can be sure that it will be covered under an Apache license. It's basically a requirement for every project that the software they develop or release is covered and is distributed under the Apache license. So just a few numbers. So initially the ASF in 1999 when it started, we basically had three projects, three top-level projects. One was obviously the Apache web server. The other one was the Jakarta project. That was the one where IBM was involved in donating Java-related code, et cetera. Jakarta kind of became a separate little umbrella project for individual Java projects. Nowadays, Jakarta doesn't exist anymore. But obviously, because of that, we had a strong focus on web-related and Java-related projects at the ASF. Things have changed. Now we have a very diverse range of software development projects from different topics, different technologies. I think it's about almost 180 top-level projects. Just to go back, the third project we actually had was actually not a software development project, but actually a project called Apache Conferences. It was a project created with the idea we want to grow our community. So how do we do that? Well, let's do conferences. The conference in 1998 wasn't a financial success, but it was successful in the sense that a lot of people came, and it attracted a few new people to the web server project. Nowadays, the conference is handled a bit different in a different way, but it was the first example where we actually had a project that's not specifically about software development. So Apache doesn't necessarily mean everything about software, but of course, that's the majority of the projects we have. In fact, there's new projects coming. We have a talk about the incubator project later. We have 63 so-called podlinks in the incubator, which means it's new projects. They are not yet a top-level project, but are on the way to become one. Initially, we had, in terms of the web server project, a few dozen committers who had commit access to the web server project or the Jakarta project. And I checked yesterday, we now have 5,511 committers, people with commit access to one or more repository or one or more project at the ASF. Initially, when the foundation was created, we had, I think, 20 or 21 members of the foundation. Basically, the original members of the Apache group became the initial members of the foundation, and now we have 620 members. I get back to that later, how the elections work and this. We have 190 officers, board members. I talk about this in a moment. One other thing you may have noticed that I've used different feather logos. Just a quick note, we actually, even though the feather logo from the Apache group and the web server became the ASF logo as well, and we basically kept it since the very beginning. Beginning of this year, we actually changed the feather logo. Some people felt that, well, it needs a refresh, it needs to be a bit more modern. So that's basically the new feather logo. One phrase that you sometimes hear, or actually, depending whom we talk to, hear quite a bit, is community over code. I mentioned this earlier, community is a very important part of the ASF. It's a non-profit organization. It exists with the goal to develop software for the public benefit, for the public good. And that only works if you have a community who actually, uses, contributes to, and actually develops the software. Basically, if I would have to put this in a single sentence, basically I would say, if there is a healthy community for a project, then development and innovation actually happens, or it just happens. If there's something wrong with the community, if you have poisonous people in the project, then that tends to turn people off and good people will leave the project. So it's very important to us to make sure that every project is healthy in the sense of community. Also, as I mentioned earlier, we want diversity. Diversity also in the sense of that it shouldn't be just a single company being involved or having paid staff who develop and contribute to a single project. Someone is laughing here in the first row. I think there are obviously some cases where sometimes there's a majority of the developers are from a single company. We try to avoid this to make sure that the project is able to survive, even if that company or these individuals leave the project and go elsewhere, or if the focus basically changes. As I mentioned with the Apache Web Server team, some of the original people actually leaving, new people joining, it makes sure that the project is sustainable or actually increases the survivability of that project. So the end result is you have better code and more long-term code that is used by people. Another term that's very important is meritocracy. So the ASF, sometimes you hear people saying like the ASF is a meritocracy. As I mentioned earlier, the individual projects, basically as a contributor or committer, you can basically get on with your work because the ASF, if required, takes care of legal issues or any other issues. Meritocracy, what that means is basically we don't have a typical org structure that you would expect from a company. There's no, we have a president, but it's not like that the more senior people in the company have more responsibility. Responsibility comes with merit. The more merit you have, merit in the sense is that you've shown that you care about the project. That typically means contributing patches, contributing code, but it can also mean contributing documentation, contributing bug reports. In fact, I became a member of the Apache group because I submitted lots and lots of bug reports. They didn't really fix it quickly enough, so at some point I contributed patches, and at some point they just gave me access and said, you just committed yourself. So basically, I was able to show merit, or actually gained merit, by caring about the project, and by contributing to the project. And that basically applies to the individual projects, but also applies to the foundation itself. In terms of the individual, well, the phrase may be wrong, the chain of merit, but the individual in terms of terminology, so of course you have the users of the various projects. You can become a contributor by contributing patches, by contributing documentation, or by simply helping other users to fix their configuration or answer their questions on the mailing list. The next step after that is where you basically would be asked to sign a contributor license agreement, is becoming a committer. Commit access means you have direct access to change code in one or more of the repositories of the foundation. Typically, being a committer of a project means that you also become part of the project, becoming a project member, sometimes referred to as a PMC member. So project equals top-level project equals project management committee, PMC. That's sometimes the terminology you see regarding this. Some projects make a distinction between project member and committer. I think the Apache Web Server project still does that. You can give someone commit access without making him part of the actual project. Being a project member means that they are the ones who can have an official vote if there's anything that needs to be voted on. And I get to how this actually works in a moment. But many projects, I believe, these days don't distinguish between committer and project member. Once you are a committer, you're part of the project, and that's it. The next step, I wouldn't say next step, but in terms of the foundation, it's fairly separate. You, a developer or contributor, could just work on a particular project or multiple projects and doesn't really have to care about the foundation. Of course, he or she should care about it. But it's not a requirement. You can just get on with your development work on the stuff that you're interested in and don't have to worry about the foundation itself. However, again, based on merit, based on seeing someone caring about the project, caring about the foundation itself, these people may be or will typically be invited to become a member of the foundation. How this works is it requires, so we have annual membership meetings, which happen online on IRC, like basically in a chat room, and people nominate project members or committers for being a member of the foundation, and then there's a majority vote required to become a member of the foundation, and the member of the foundation are technically the stakeholders of the foundation. As I said, there's no companies cannot become a member of the foundation, so it's basically the members itself who make up the shareholders of the say stakeholders. I meant the shareholders of the foundation. This is my attempt to explain this, how this works. It's a very simplified diagram. It's probably wrong in various ways, but let me try to explain this. As I said, the projects, the top-level projects, are basically like a little microcosmos. The idea behind this is the foundation is an umbrella that sits on top of these projects, the 180 projects we have. The foundation itself is mainly there to manage the administrative side of the projects. So it's not like in a normal organization where you could have a senior VP having the right to make decisions on when something gets released or which feature gets built into a specific software. The foundation exists as a proper organization. So we have a board of directors. Again, at the same annual members meeting I mentioned, we elect a new board. The board is tasked with basically exercising oversight of the foundation and of the various projects we have. They typically delegate that oversight to the officers, so that's the VPs of the foundation. So if you have a VP of the Apache Web Server project, you have a VP of Hadoop, and they're the so-called chairs for these top-level projects. Sometimes this gets confused with this being a leadership position. So being the chair of a project obviously shows that the people trust that person. It shows the merit that people have gained and reached that position. So it's a leadership position in certain ways, but not in the sense that the chair suddenly has the power to say, okay, I need these following five features being taken care of in the next 2 months. That's not how this works. So the exercise, exercising the oversight is purely from a point of view that the board needs to make sure, or the foundation needs to make sure that the projects are healthy. So the chairs are the eyes and ears of the board, and the chairs is mainly an admin position in the sense that they have to send reports to the board. Depending on the project, I think on every 3 months, every 2 months, or in some cases, depending on the project, every month. Projects don't only include the software development project, things like certain committees like infrastructure or the press team or other things have the same requirements that they have to submit the reports. In terms of the foundation, it's very hard to basically distinguish, okay, where does the foundation start and where does it end? Obviously, the right-hand side is the foundation itself from a legal point of view. There's a board of directors, there's the officers who have been appointed, etc. And the board simply creates these top-level projects. How members are voted in, etc., is up to these individual projects. They can define how they want to do their day-to-day operations, when they do releases, and how this works. So the admin side of the foundation isn't really allowed to get involved in that. However, the board or the officers will take action if something is going wrong in a project, or simply because the project there's no activity anymore because people have moved on to other things or it has become of less importance. And obviously, contributors and users are important because they are part of the wider community, the Apache family, basically. Does that make sense? Any questions so far about this? Anyone?
Are PMC members also AEC members?
PMC members are not ASF members. So you can become part of a top-level project, a PMC member, but not being an ASF member. So that's a separate step. That's what I mentioned with the chain of merit, basically. So the PMC members itself would vote in new committers or new contributors, and on the foundation side, it's the members who nominate typically PMC members or committers, but it's not a requirement to be, so you can't become a member of the foundation without being in any of the projects. So we have cases like that. For example, Sally Kuderi, our VP of the press team, she doesn't do software development, but she's a member of the foundation. Talking about, how are we doing on time? A bit of time left. Talking about the communication at the ASF. So obviously we don't have buildings, headquarters, where people work and do stuff. It's all basically a virtual organization in that sense. More or less the only physical existence we have at the ASF is basically the various servers we own, which are distributed over a couple of data centers. The majority of all communication at the ASF happens on mailing lists. Sometimes IRC is being used, like a chat room communication. Mailing lists are very, very important. You sometimes hear the phrase, if it didn't happen on the mailing list, then it didn't happen. You know that, yeah. The idea behind this is, so most importantly, the mailing lists for the development projects are all public. So it's easy for users to, contributors to get involved, to look at like archive, whatever, online for the user and also the development mailing list. And there's a standard set of mailing lists that's given to each project. You have a user list, you have a dev list, and there's typically an internal PMC list, which is not public. It is encouraged to keep all communication public, so the PMC list or private lists are only used for communication that isn't supposed to be public. As already mentioned, the general members meetings we do every year are done via IRC as well. The mailing list make it easy also in the terms of, or in the sense of, we have members which are basically distributed over many, many different countries, many, many different time zones. one benefit of a mailing list is it's asynchronous. So basically, you can have a discussion going on for 1 or 2 hours on a mailing list, but that means at that time there will be some people asleep somewhere else because it's in a different time zone. The mailing list gives them the chance to come back to that discussion at a later point in time. And these mailing lists are also archived to make it easier for people to go back to see how decisions were made or which decisions have been made and make it easier for new contributors to basically look, okay, why did they shut my proposal down? If someone says, like, look at the archive, we've talked about this 5 times and we decided to not do this. So it's just one example where these public archives are quite useful. Who actually is on the development mailing list? Who has been subscribed to one? Okay. So sometimes when you, or typically when you join a mailing list, a development mailing list, you will see people in some cases responding with just a +1 or a -1 or a 0. +1 means it's typically used when it shows agreement, but it's also used for official votes. For example, if people vote on, this development branch seems to be stable enough, should we release a version out of this? And then people will respond with +1, +1. Sometimes with a 0, which means maybe or I don't really have an opinion. Why this is being used? Well, one reason is everyone's lazy, so this is very, very short to respond, and it makes it easy to actually identify agreement or disagreement with a specific email. You don't have to read, it typically makes sense, but you don't have to read the various comments in all the details. It's very easy to say, okay, these 5 paragraphs of text actually mean +1. If there's a veto, that would be a -1. However, you cannot just veto something. If you veto something, you have to provide a reason why that's the case. That's typically easy if it's a patch, you can point out the issues with it, or you can, if it's actually a bug in there, you can actually just fix it and say, yes, I'm +1 on this, but here's a bug, this needs to be added to this. In terms of commits, this +1, -1 thing typically gets used. So there's 2 types of processes for managing commits in a software development project. One is referred to as review then commit, which means I post something to the mailing list and here's a link to my patch. And once that patch receives at least 3 +1s from PMC members, then the person is allowed to actually commit it to the source code. Typically, that gets used for a stable branch, while the more lazy consensus type way is commit then review, which means people just commit their changes and rely on the fact that people will review their code after they have committed it. So what I've mentioned so far, the commit process, the mailing lists, what else, the Apache license, how projects are managed, the difference between the development side of the foundation and the admin side of the foundation, that's what people sometimes refer to as the Apache way. Some people don't like the term very much, but I think it kind of, I think it's a useful term to define the essence of what the ASF actually is. And most importantly, it's all about community over code. Just going there a bit more quickly in terms of time. So most of the stuff that happens at the foundation is obviously about the software development projects. But there's a few more things. Before projects become a top-level project, they have to go through the incubator project. No, we're not into farming chickens or producing eggs. It's about, so the incubator was created 2003. So that's 4 years after the ASF was created, because we saw that, okay, we have all these new projects who are interested in joining the ASF. So how do we make sure that they know about the Apache way? It's not just about the Apache way. It's also when we get contributions, software donations from companies to make sure that all legal issues have been sorted out, trademark-related things like boring paperwork. And to make sure we have a certain diversity in the in the project. There's now a thing called the Apache Maturity Model, which is basically a set of rules or requirements to define when a project has reached that level of maturity for when it can become a top-level project of the ASF. So currently we have about 63 of these podlings, as they are referred to in the incubator. The average time it takes to go through the incubator is typically about a year. Sometimes it's just 6 months. It can take longer. And there are also some cases where things simply didn't work out, which is good in the sense that, okay, we didn't get to the point where we told people, hey, this is a proper Apache top-level project, go using it, and then it basically dies off after a few months. Well, dying off may be the wrong term. We have a so-called Apache Attic project. The idea behind this is that if development for a project stops, if the developers and contributors move elsewhere or have no interest anymore in the project, doesn't necessarily mean that the users have stopped using it. So the Attic project is a separate project with people being on the PMC who exercise basically a restricted oversight over these projects. And the idea is that it provides still a place where you can find the project, you can find the mailing list, you can find the archive, you can find the source code, and you can download the releases if you really want to. However, it's not intended to actually rebuild the community or make bug fixes on new releases. It's basically a dead project in the sense there's nothing happening anymore. But you can still subscribe to the mailing list and ask questions about it, for example. I already mentioned the infrastructure team very briefly. They provide all the great services at the ASF that you need for software development. Have a look at status.apache.org. Provides some nice statistics of what's happening, number of commits per day or in total or something. It's quite interesting information, and it shows what kind of it shows the good work that the infrastructure team is doing. As I said, it's a combination of paid contractors. It simply became too big to rely on volunteers. But there's still a large number of volunteers who get involved and help the infrastructure team. We have a security team. Basically, the central security team is tasked with basically being the first point of contact if someone wants to report a security vulnerability in any of the Apache projects. Some projects have a separate security mailing list, like the larger ones, like Apache, I think Hadoop, like OpenOffice has one as well. So the Apache security team isn't the one fixing the actual vulnerabilities, but they manage the process and make sure that the PMC follows through in actually addressing the security issues if they have been confirmed, if they have confirmed that there is actually a security issue. There's a press team. We're not a normal company which does marketing in the traditional sense, but obviously things like press releases and talking to the media, to analysts, is quite important. So we have a separate public relations committee or press team. Sally Kuderi is the VP of that team and manages most of that. And then we have a select number of Apache Foundation members who are basically also monitoring that press mailing list, if any questions from the press are coming in. It used to be part of the PRC. We have a fundraising committee. We are a nonprofit organization, so getting money through donations is extremely important. Apart from getting donations from individuals, which is quite a bit through PayPal and Amazon, you can even give us some bitcoins if you have some left over, that's fine. We run a sponsorship program. If you go to the foundation sponsorship page, you can read about the details. Basically, we have four levels. Platinum costs about $100,000 per year, and we have a bronze level, which is about $5,000 per year. And that helps us to get the necessary money to basically run the foundation. A large part of the money goes into the infrastructure team. Well, not paying the contractors, but actually paying for traffic, paying for hosting. We get certain things for free, but we found that we cannot just rely on donated hardware. We need proper infrastructure that works, not something that's out of warranty for 10 years. There's also a separate trademarks team which looks after the branding and trademarks for the ASF. It doesn't happen very often that we have to actually engage lawyers. It has happened, but it's very rare. So we have an ASF legal affairs committee. So there's a public mailing list. Legal Discuss is public. The idea is that members of the project can ask questions about, like, I want to incorporate this library into our code. It's under a GPL license or some other random license. How can I do this, or what do I need to do to make this work? There's a legal internal, which is internal, and typically it's just the committee members, which are foundation members or PMC members, who answer these questions. If required, we have a set of pro bono lawyers. We have on a retainer. We can ask for, like, official advice. I think we work with two different law firms who provide these pro bono services in the US. I think one exception was a trademark lawyers. I think there's some money involved because, that's apparently not what you get for pro bono work. So that was the main. There's a few other committees and teams at the ASF to handle specific things, but these were the main ones that I found important to mention. This brings me more or less to the end of this presentation. Are there any questions left? Did I confuse everyone completely about what the foundation is? There's a question.
You mentioned that last, nice presentation. Last, you mentioned that once a year you had this chat where you can nominate
The annual members meeting,
Does that happen at the same time each year?
Roughly. It's not like exactly at the same time. Someone thinks, okay, it's this month again of the year, we should set up, define a date. It's typically the board who talks about this in one of their monthly board meetings. Actually, they have their monthly board meetings are phone calls. They just call in, talk through the reports on any issues.
Yes.
And at some point they decide, okay, we need to do an annual members meeting, and we'll define a date for that. And then people have typically a 3-4 weeks time to nominate new members. And then at the meeting is typically in two parts. So you meet on IRC, people basically post. The board and the officers post links to their reports, to the important foundation-related reports, like the treasurer would show, okay, this is the money we have in our account, this is what happened in the last year, etc. We typically make these reports public. In general, all board minutes are public anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's, I think, 48 hours or so, or 72 hours, with a separate second part of the meeting. So within that time frame, people have time to vote. So the voting is offline. Mm-hmm. So even if you're not able to attend the meeting in person, like logging on IRC and joining, you can attend the meeting basically offline, in the sense that you can vote on these new members or any other votes that have been raised for that particular meeting.
Okay. So the people that vote on these nominated members, are they typically people that are within the same project where they have some sort of engagement with those persons? Or
typically people get nominated by the people who know them, and it's typically encouraged, I'm nominating this person because of XYZ. Here's why I think this person would be a great fit for the foundation. So that's the main question that gets asked, okay, why do you think that person is a good fit for the foundation? And usually explain, oh, he's doing this, he's been involved for like 7 years, or she's been contributing lots of documentation, she cares about the foundation and that kind of information. And then similar people will just respond sometimes saying like +1, +1, if they agree with that sentiment about that person. The process isn't great. Sometimes, especially in smaller projects some projects, especially in the big data area, have a lot of overlap. That's not the case for some other projects. So some of these projects are slightly more isolated, so it's sometimes difficult to get enough members. We do look at basically committers in terms of how long they have been a committer and not being a member, and to look at these things, trying to make sure that no one is missed. But there are cases where someone was doing absolutely great stuff, and he or she has been a member for 7 years and no one noticed, basically. So it happens, but we try to avoid that.
Okay. Thank you.
Are we doing on time? Do we have?
I think we are out of time now, but thank you for the session.
I'm still around. If you have more questions, feel free to ask me. Thanks for your time.